Welcome to this week's episode of The Show Report, where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on this quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is publisher of We Are Libertarians, Mr. Chris Spangle.
Hello.
And managing editor of the We Are Libertarians news site, the one and only Joe Ruiz.
Good evening.
Guys, episode 9. They didn't think we'd get there. We're there. One more to double digits. I'm excited.
If you make it, I might have to cancel the show.
Boo. Guys, there was some breaking news today I want to jump right into. This has me incredibly concerned. I know that Joe Ruiz, you are totally concerned about this too. I am not happy about this. We got to talk about it real fast because we have a packed episode. But Ben Affleck has been signed to play Batman. This is breaking news out of Hollywood, California. I am distraught. Joe, your thoughts in 10 seconds.
You can't tell me 10 seconds to rant about Ben Affleck playing Batman. The
all right,
most
Chris,
awful
what do you,
ever
Frankie, what do you think?
Idea.
I don't understand what all the brouhaha is about. He can't do brooding. He can't do brooding like the last guy that did it, Christian Bale. No. But I think he can make a great Bruce Wayne. He is a perfect Bruce Wayne, but as far as Batman, I don't know about all that.
I think right. The villains will laugh. So guys, instead of complaining, let's do a solution. Real quick, Joe, who should be Batman if it's not Christian Bale?
Charlie Hunnam.
Okay, Chris Spangle, who should be Batman?
Maya Axton.
Maya, I love that choice. And I will take Daniel Day-Lewis as Abraham Lincoln playing Batman. I think that's a dynamic move right there.
47 years ago.
There you go. I love it. I think it's a perfect mix. I wish they would have consulted me. All right, guys. We'll see how it turns out. You never know. People didn't like the idea of Heath Ledger's Joker. Turned out brilliant. So let's see what happens. I want to move on to, real quick, the Libertarian Tweet of the Week. Now, Patton Oswalt, if you don't follow him on Twitter, you're missing out. The guy's hilarious. I think he just trolled all of his followers this past week with real right-wing conservative tweets. Got a lot of attention. Super funny. He tweeted this out, and it tickled me, and I thought it was just something worth sharing. Be a warrior that your son may be a doctor, and his son a poet, and his son a podcaster, and his son a resentful libertarian. I got to say, good stuff from Patton Oswalt. Follow him. That's the Libertarian Tweet of the Week. And finally, the newsroom. Now, Chris, we've avoided talking about this show. I think we both like this show a lot. First season was pretty excellent, but we haven't really talked about it much because it is, you know, it's fiction. Well, but I feel like they crossed a line this week. What do you think?
I haven't seen this week's past episode, so I can't say one way or the other.
I'm going to play for you guys a clip. I want you to see what showed up in a past episode here. We're going to play it for the audience as well. I think they've crossed a line that we're going to have to boycott this show, guys. So we're going to get this playing, and we'll comment. I think you'll agree. We'll comment on a second.
Campaign reporting.
I told my bosses that nobody was covering Ron Paul, and they were like, go do it yourself. And I was like, really? And they were like, really? So, Ron Paul 2012!
Is this your...
Woohoo!
Okay.
Seriously?
Yep, she's into it.
The end of that sentence. And plainly, his concern is with the middle class.
The middle class are the very...
The better point is, we don't need clean air and water regulations. We don't need FEMA. We don't need antitrust laws. We don't need the IRS or the Department of Education or the Federal Reserve. We need freedom.
What the f*** did you just say?
If you listen to Ron Paul...
I have. He's a batty old crank who wrote instruction manuals on how to get away with shooting the black kid who's stealing your car. He's not Betty White.
He didn't write those letters.
Yes, he did. And then he signed them, and then he charged money for them, so I don't give a shit if he wants to legalize weed. I can already dial the phone and have an ounce delivered to this table before the check comes.
Then for God's sake, do it.
He did not write those letters, Chris. He didn't do it.
He is sort of a batty old crank, though. I mean, it's Aaron Sorkin. What are we expecting? I mean, Josiah Bartlett, the fake president on the West Wing, was a Democrat's wet dream for a president. I mean, he's a liberal guy who writes a liberal show, and of course they're not going to understand Ron Paul's nuance. Half the time, I don't even understand Ron Paul's nuance, but... You know, it is what it is. So it's still a great show. And, you know, just like with the West Wing, you look over the constant bashing of anything that smells of the right. you know, because it is entertaining and it is fascinating, but hey, it's par for the course.
Now, of course, it was tongue-in-cheek with the boycott. I still think it's an excellent show. Just interesting how, you know, Sorkin decided to represent Ron Paul with just a drunk ditzy coverage, or a drunk ditzy girl providing the coverage and trying to spew out talking points. And yeah, it was just kind of a, you're right, Chris, it's a liberal wet dream on what Ron Paul, how he would be dismissed. And but yeah, still an excellent show, kind of a almost humorous in the way that they portrayed it. Joe, I don't know if you follow this or not, any thoughts?
Yeah, I do follow. I watched the show, I'm caught up now. He knew that the best way to approach and express his opinion about Ron Paul's libertarian approach to government was to, I mean, create this character who he thought represented what Ron Paul supporters are. And the problem is, you could tell that the character, he oversimplified Ron Paul's platform without explaining why Paul feels the way he feels about certain issues like the Federal Reserve. And I think that that's, you know, like Chris said, to be expected from Aaron Sorkin. He obviously leans to the left. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a Hollywood writer. It's his show. He can do and say whatever he wants to. And the writing's still fantastic. The character development and acting, it's all still great. I'll still watch it. This isn't going to scare me away.
Hey, Ryan, are we going to talk about the Ron Paul channel at all tonight?
You know, we might get into that if we find time. If not, I think it'll be a pretty big topic next week.
Yeah, if we don't get into it, go listen to the Freedom Fiends podcast, FEENS. Freedom Fiends podcast. The title is Another Dinosaur Goes Into the Tar Pit. And they're not calling Ron Paul a dinosaur, but I think they really nailed my feelings on the Ron Paul channel, so check that out.
So, of course, Sorkin did not give Ron Paul a serious look, but there is some good news on our horizon, guys. Al Jazeera has launched in the U.S., so we now have Al Jazeera America as a U.S. news source. You know, it promises, really, what this is it's a test of what the American consumer really wants from cable news networks. They're putting a premise out there. They're going to provide more fact-based, more unbiased news, and the real question is, are they going to get the viewership? It's really an interesting experiment that we're going to see that, you know, can 14 hours of hard news and documentaries capture the attention of really an American public that's addicted to infotainment? According to the channel's acting chief executive, viewers will see a news channel unlike the others. As our programming proves, Al Jazeera America will air fact-based, unbiased, and in-depth news. Chris, what do you think about this? Is the American public ready for this kind of news, or have they just put together the ultimate recipe for disaster?
It's a little bit of both. I think it's unfair the way that you characterize the American public, because I don't think that, by and large, I think most people don't care because they're not being engaged in the right way. I think most of the content that is produced on radio, TV, and newspapers, I think most of the content doesn't really fit the 21st century mold. You know, I think the way that we view media is that everything is community based, everything is niche based, and when people want facts today, they want facts, they want context, analysis, and maybe a little action item at the end there. And you know, just the basic facts, it's just turns people off a little bit. It makes them want to tune out a little bit. The other part of it is that most of the cable news is all opinion-based. So you know what you're going to get. You know that Sean Hannity's point of view is going to be. So it's unsurprising. So Al Jazeera can be successful if the documentaries can be entertaining, if there is some commentary, but it is not predictable, if it's a novel approach. I watched a little bit of Al Jazeera, and it was... listen, I think that the PBS NewsHour is good television, and I found Al Jazeera to be a little dry and boring. So I don't know if they're going to... I think it's just it's the beginning of it. They're just sort of finding their rhythm, but... it remains to be seen. I think people will not be able to get over their brand. I think 50% of this country, just because it is a Muslim-based outfit or an, you know, from a mostly Muslim country, let's say, put it that way, I think that people just won't get past that, and it might just end up being an unsuccessful attempt.
Joe, have you had a chance to check out Al Jazeera yet? Do you have any thoughts on this new network? I mean, it is kind of historic. I mean, it's not very often that major networks like this start. It is it's interesting to be able to watch this happen.
Yeah, the concept gets an A for effort. I mean, I think that in terms of ratings, it's going to have like the Whole Foods effect. And what I mean by that is, you know, in our neighborhood, they just opened up the first Whole Foods store. And for the first 2 weeks, you could barely walk through the place because it was so crowded. And everybody who had heard that the store was coming, they'd heard the hype, and they all wanted to shop there, and they all wanted to buy their groceries there and feel better because they were buying what they thought was a healthier alternative. And 2 weeks later, the store was just, you know, your normal health food people out shopping, and everybody else was back at Meijer and Walmart and Martin Supermarket, which is a chain up here. And you know what I mean? Like, they were back to the places that they were ordinarily going to. And I think the same thing will happen with Al Jazeera. If you start a network that's supposedly 14 hours of this unbiased, fact-based journalism, that's great. The information seekers are going to be attracted to the information. They're going to go there. The people who are happy with the spin and the reality TV news channels, they're going to go back to the stations that they regularly frequented. But I do think that the other news channels, we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about how CNN has been doing some more investigative journalism and how Fox News has had a shakeup in their lineups and MSNBC has had some shaking up in their lineups with Alec Baldwin joining, and what we talked about a couple episodes ago. And I think that some of that might be a little bit of foresight on the behalf of the other stations, where they're thinking, you know, all right, let's do something to keep our lineup interesting so that everybody doesn't just run over there, but they also want to stick to our brand to see what these new changes bring. I think that was a strategy in terms of competition for them.
So is it fair to say that it just could be the market at work here, that competition is good, that Al Jazeera could inject facts into the system, and a new player and a new source of competition is going to make everyone better? Is that what we're looking at?
I don't know how scared any of the other channels are. I know MSNBC and Fox, they're probably not that scared by it at all. I mean, they really don't. They're just sort of not the same thing. You know, if you like Fox News, you're not going to watch Al Jazeera. It's not going to take away any of Fox News' audience whatsoever. Zero. Fox News audience is in their mid-70s, and they like, you know, the conservative point of view, and they're certainly not going to turn into the news channel that was a propaganda arm for bin Laden in the 90s and early 2000s. They're not going to lose audience. MSNBC may have something to worry about, because I would think that more left-leaning folks would turn into Al Jazeera, and when you don't want to hear the same opinion every single night and you want some more facts, you might tune into that. I would say CNN has some competition in them. But, you know, I've been exposing my wife to cable news over the last week or so. She's been home because she's not going to beauty school at night. And so we sit and we watch the Jake Tapper show, and we watch, you know, some of the news programs, and she kind of pays attention to it. And she learned some stuff while we watched Jake Tapper. But when we were watching Al Jazeera the other night, the part about child labor in Bangladesh, I think it was, she was like, that happens? So I think it was sort of enlightening, you know? It's like, oh, wow, the jeans that I wear, the Gap jeans that I wear, are made by 12-year-olds. And that's a huge resource issue. Al Jazeera has, I think, anybody know how many bureaus they've opened up just in America for this? I think it's like 20 cities.
Right, between New York and San Francisco, I think it's right around 20 or 22 that they've opened up.
They had this 5-minute little mini documentary piece on the building of the new San Francisco Bay Bridge, which I didn't know was being built, being in Indianapolis. Now, does that mean I really care about it? Does that help me at the ballot box, knowing that a bridge was built in San Francisco and I spent 5 minutes watching it? I don't know, but it was interesting because it was something that I didn't know. It was novel. But, you know, so they had that kind of reach around the globe. They have that amount of bureaus in all over the world. So they have that kind of global reach that I think CNN would like to think they have. You know, you see Al Jazeera report from Egypt. Their reporters are on the street. The CNN reporters are in a hotel. The Fox News reporter is in Jerusalem. So, and that's not a joke.
So, I think you make a good point about whether or not it's going to be relevant to the individual. What I'm interested in seeing, I want to really go through an election cycle with Al Jazeera America. I want to see, you know, because back in 2012, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate for president, he's running for office, and you just hardly ever saw him on a major cable news network. What I want to see is, will Al Jazeera America give that third party candidate, you know, almost, I'm not going to, you know, pie in the sky would be that they get equal time, but are we going to see a bump in time from this network? Are they going to start covering the stories that aren't covered by the other news networks? And I'm really excited to see an election cycle with them in the game and to just see what they bring and what they add to that narrative. I will say, oh, go ahead, Joe, I'm sorry.
No, I'll say that will be interesting. It'll also be interesting when the next Casey Anthony or Trayvon Martin-esque story appears to see how they cover that while the other news stations are saturated in it. You know, will Al Jazeera America also be saturated in it, or they will, you know, will they focus on other things? That'll be interesting to see also. And Chris, I don't think that scared is the right word. I don't think that they scared them, but the other stations, regardless, would be foolish to not make some preparations or shake things up just a little bit to make things interesting, because whether or not a majority of their audience is going to go there, the more independent-minded people who just kind of tend to lean that way, they might switch over just out of curiosity. And those, you know, cable networks are very worried about people changing the channels.
Yeah, just like we talked, I think, last week about CNN, investigative journalism is a niche. And just like libertarianism is a niche, or liberal points of view are a niche. And so now you have, if you're seeing the same stories on CNN repeated all the time, which the reason they do that is audience testing shows that people want the same news within a 15-minute span, so it just kind of repeats, so you get all the headlines. You know, so I don't know. That's the niche competition that I think that they have. The advantage that CNN has is that it's in high def. And I think that's, for a lot of people, it just makes the channel look kind of chintzy when it's, you know, whether they've spent $1 billion on this thing or not, the fact that it is not in high def gives CNN an advantage in the investigative journalism straight down the middle niche.
You know, that's not the only rocky start that Al Jazeera has going against it. AT&T UVerse actually dropped them the day before they went live. You know, this has spurred off a number of lawsuits between the two companies, and it also cut out about 5 million potential viewers from the network. But that didn't stop Al Jazeera from coming out swinging. I don't know if you guys were able to catch clips of the first 5 to 10 minutes of them coming online. Even with some of these setbacks, I mean, they really did come out swinging. They took a number of jabs at MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News for not supposedly providing news in a way that Americans deserve. It was an interesting kind of docu-infomercial kind of opening that really took a lot of swipes at the mainstream media. Someone that really caught the brunt of it was Glenn Beck. He was pictured in one of the clips, and he did not take too kindly to it. I want to play for you guys a clip on how Glenn Beck welcomed Al Jazeera America to the cable news world, and then get your comments after it plays.
Because Al Jazeera, the voice, quite honestly, the voice of the enemy. Oh, no, it's just Soledad O'Brien. Really? Sell me another shill.
Yeah, just a real quick clip of Glenn Beck welcoming Al Jazeera America to the cable news world by reminding people that it is the voice of the enemy and that Soledad O'Brien is just another shill. There's a lot of ironic comments coming out of there. Chris, it looks like you're chomping at the bit. Nail this one for me.
Yeah, Beck has been very critical of Al Jazeera. You know, and it is kind of ironic because in that beginning clip, they, you know, his staff thought they took a swipe, and he mentioned, no, they put us in the same league as Fox News and CNN and MSNBC. They recognized us as one of the four American cable channels for news. Like, Let's be proud of that. So I think that's a feather in his cap that Al Jazeera recognized him. Now, he has recognized them in a very negative way. And I don't know if it is... I think it's like 60% his Islamophobia. Now, I like Glenn Beck. I listen to Glenn Beck. I am a Blaze subscriber, but he is a complete Islamophobe. I just... You know, he makes me paranoid about the coming caliphate that will take over the entire world and will kneel before the sword of, you know, the great conqueror. It's terrifying listening to him sometimes, but I listen because it makes me think. And, you know, he has been extremely critical. So 60% of it, I think, is just the fact that he's leading the charge against a foreign voice, a propaganda machine for bin Laden, as he calls it. 40% is to promote his own network. They've made a really strong push to get the Blaze on cable providers. Comcast has been a huge victim. So is Dish, DirecTV, because they won't put the Blaze on. So his point of view is, you're going to put on an Arab-American television network, but you won't put on an American-made television network that has clearly demonstrated that people want it by flooding your Facebook, Twitter, and phones.
So let me explain that real quick for everybody. Al Jazeera is owned by the Royal Emir of the oil-rich Persian Gulf state of Qatar. Chris, let's start with you. You know, Chris was kind of given the Glenn Beck spin on it. Joe, do you think this is a huge issue for American viewers that basically the royal family of a Middle Eastern country owns the network that will be providing news to the American people?
You know, the only way I really know how to answer that question is that I'm an American and it doesn't bother me. That's really the only way that I know how to answer it. And, you know, Glenn Beck had a lot of comments in this clip. It was like an 8-minute clip, and he said some things that I agreed with. He said some things that I disagreed with. And a lot of it was him making the point that they're willing to put this station on the cable networks, but they're not willing to put the Blaze station on the cable networks. And I disagree with him in the sense that he said Al Jazeera is the voice of the enemy. I mean, does it scare me that President Obama and Hillary Clinton have supported it? Sure, but I mean, you know, that's only because I know what kind of misinformation that they've projected onto the American public in their time. But what I agreed with Glenn Beck on is he said we don't want less voices, we want more voices. And so he's not, I mean, he made the argument against Al Jazeera, sure, but I think what he's more upset about is the fact that they're not willing to let more voices on the air on these cable networks. And I completely agree. I mean, this is how the market works. Bring in the competition, figure out what the people want, what the people are willing to watch, what works, and go with it.
Yeah, I would say that I view them just like I view every other outlet. With complete suspicion and disdain. So, you know, I think that I am getting their point of view. You know, it should not go unnoticed that the entire Al Jazeera Egypt network walked out and did not return to their jobs after they were told by management, essentially the head of the network in Qatar, said, you will support the Muslim Brotherhood, and they walked out and quit. And I think that anybody who thinks that there won't be some top-down influence is foolish, just like Rupert Murdoch does with Fox News. He put Roger Ailes in for a reason. And if you look at the newspapers in Australia right now, the Rupert Murdoch-owned newspapers, the covers, the days before their elections, are very anti-Labor. And it's just like every news source. You have to watch it with a keen eye. You have to look at it and examine what they're saying and listen to the subtle messages behind it and look at the stories that they're picking. Guys, the images out of Syria have been horrendous for 2.5 years. And all of a sudden, CNN and other news stations are just now starting to put out the images of dead bodies in Syria when we haven't seen that on any of the cable news channels until now. Today, why? What is the reason behind it? And I don't have an answer for that, but I think it's curious. So what is the reasoning behind that? We don't know yet, but we may soon. So you've got to think outside of the box when you watch these outlets or any outlet including us. We're coming from a point of view. At knife point, make Ryan and Joe pronounce themselves libertarians. Right, guys? Right?
He's only cut us once, though. I've only been cut once, so it's not too bad.
We had to take a blood oath.
No, we don't believe in oaths.
Yeah, you and your Illuminati stuff.
No, it is interesting, though, guys, and it's something that what I think of is that it's a wonderful thing that we have the First Amendment. And so we have this freedom of the press, and so that means that, you know, news outlets are free to present the news in any way that they see fit. It's up to us to decide, and it's a wonderful thing. Where they could really use a First Amendment like this is over in Britain. I know that you guys have been keeping up with these stories just as much as I have, but there's some really big problems going on over there that I think we should talk about. It really weaves into our narrative that's been going on the last few weeks of the possibility of investigative journalism becoming criminalized. Now, we just learned this week that Guardian editors were forced by the British government to destroy hard drives that held files leaked by Edward Snowden. So under threat of legal action, the Guardian decided to go ahead and destroy these hard drives so that they would not be prevented from continuing to report on the NSA leaks and global surveillance programs. Now, despite being told that these copies were encrypted, that these files exist elsewhere, agents from the government communications headquarters, the GCHQ, which is, I believe, the equivalent of the NSA over in Britain, still required that these drives be obliterated. One agent from this from the GCHQ told the Guardian editors, "You've had your fun. Now we want the stuff back." This is one of those situations, guys, where even though we do like to talk about how the American press is biased, how even our own government is really up to some shady things, what we do not have right now is this kind of actions. These things are not happening here yet. I think we have to keep that in perspective as we watch these British stories unfold. But I do want to pose a question to you guys. Even though that the GCHQ knew, you know, the British government knew that other copies exist, that Edward Snowden is obviously, you know, he's obviously a pretty bright guy. He's given these files to multiple outlets. They're obviously being stored in multiple locations. So knowing that, is this really just some kind of intimidation step against the Guardian?
No, I think that they probably think that if they can destroy these, then they'll find the next outlet that has the files and they'll destroy them. And you know what I mean? Like across the board, if they could manage to locate any of the backups or any of the duplicates and get rid of them, then they'll be better off. And this is, you know, this is one of those things where it's, we spend a lot of time talking about the American government because we live under it. But libertarians, you talk to any libertarian who philosophically gets it, and it's all governments that get too big for their britches on a long enough timeline. And so when you see something like this, it's not like, oh, well, you know, at least we don't live in Britain, because we could absolutely get there, especially with some of the steps that we've taken. And so when you see something like this, it's just like, oh, well, to me, it's just a matter of time. And this is bullying, and this is force, and it's just ridiculous. That's the only thing I can really say about it. What do you think, Spangler?
What is the first thing that any tyrant or bully does? You know, any government tyrant or any block bully on the block. I mean, it's happening in Egypt right now. They're threatening the homes and lives of the Coptic Christians. They're burning down their churches. And what they're doing is saying, listen, they're going to take it out on the slim minority so that way everybody else falls in line. And so while they know that they have this data somewhere else, they're sending a message. They're saying, listen, we know you. We know this, but we're going to come in and we're going to smash your data because we want to prove a point. Now, the British have, you know, a long history with terrorism, much, much longer than ours. Going back to the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, trying to get their independence. And, you know, all the way up until the 90s, they had terrorist attacks there from within, not just foreign terrorists. So they're a little more comfortable with government surveillance. And if you've ever seen any of the posters for the surveillance state in the tunnels, in the tube, as they would call it, it's really Orwellian stuff. I'll send it to you, Ryan, so you can put it in the show notes.
Yeah, now the White House has come out and said that it would not be appropriate for the U.S. government to destroy leaked documents that were obtained by media organizations in a similar way that was ordered by the British government. You know, they came out and basically said that it would be difficult to imagine a scenario in which that would be appropriate here. However, the White House did fall short of criticizing the British for taking this action, and Deputy White House spokesman Josh Earnest refused to comment about whether or not the United States actually was in possession of these seized data and whether or not it was analyzing it. Pure speculation on our part. Is the White House involved in this, or did they simply get a heads up like was reported on Tuesday?
Well, I won't speculate and accuse them of anything, although I'll always say that I wouldn't put it past them to be involved. But I won't be conspiratorial enough to say they were absolutely involved in this. What I will say is it would be silly of them to make a statement like they made and to come out and say, you know, it would be inappropriate for us to do something similar. How many things have they done? Even with the NSA data collection, them saying at first that they are not wittingly collecting phone records and various things, we find out that they, and we talk about this every week, every time they say that they are not doing something, we find out in fact that they are. And so, you know, for them to make a statement like that, it would be interesting to see if down the line they end up doing just that.
Not saying anything is probably the right response. It's a little hypocritical if they do say something, and you run the risk of harming your relationship with probably your closest ally if you do say something. So probably saying nothing was the smartest course of action. And to Joe's point, hey, don't you guys remember when it was just limited to Verizon customers and we were just getting their phone metadata?
Right.
Those days don't come back, do they?
Right.
You know, at this point, guys, I've made this comment a number of times. I just wish Obama would go on the air and just come clean. At this point, I think they have to assume and realize that Snowden gave Greenwald and Gelman and all these other outlets, he gave them the whole story. So I think, you know, Greenwald's just sitting in the wings waiting for the president to make a statement, you know, that, oh, there's been no wittingly or no intentional breaches of protocol at the NSA. Now today, bam, they smack him down with a story that shows, in fact, there have been intentional breaches. And it seems like every time the president tries to make a statement to reassure the American people, either Glenn Greenwald or Bart Gellman or even the Wall Street Journal has gotten in on the game. They're waiting right there to just smack this down. I really think it's time for transparency.
Even Peter King.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, even Peter King, the most disgusting, disgraceful congressman that we have on the face of the planet. Now that that one guy from Florida, the real flaming liberal guy, I don't know, that's a toss-up now, but I mean, I really cannot stand Peter King. I think he is everything that is wrong with government. He is now starting to equivocate and say, maybe we ought to start looking at regulations. And the president in his interview with Chris Cuomo today or yesterday started to say, well, maybe we ought to have a public advocate and, you know, someone defending the person that we're trying or going to spy on. So they're starting to capitulate because this thing just does not quit. I mean, it's gone on since early June, and we're almost to September, and it's every single week. It's just a constant drumbeat of something coming out, and it just gets worse and worse for them.
Yeah, it's a constant flow of information. And even in Britain, you know, following this hard drive incident, Glenn Greenwald's partner, David Miranda, he was detained in Heathrow Airport for 9 hours under a provision of the UK Terrorism Act of the year 2000. He was en route from Germany to his home in Brazil. He had gone to Germany to pick up files for from Greenwald's investigative partner, Laura Poitras, and bring them back to their home in Brazil. The materials he was carrying, we're not exactly sure what Miranda was carrying, but obviously it was sensitive enough that the British detained him at Heathrow. They don't know, or we don't know at this point if it was classified or not. Jeffrey Toobin of CNN compared Miranda to a drug mule. What do you guys think? Is this fair or not? Does this imply that journalism and carrying that, basically, if you're a journalist and you're carrying classified information, are you now a terrorist?
You can't really call Miranda a journalist, though. I mean, Miranda is, you know, my wife went to beauty school and is a cosmetologist. Just because we're married, that doesn't make me a cosmetologist. So I don't think that you can say that he's a journalist. And I would say that the drug mule concept is probably unfair, and he didn't mean it to be a little bit racist, but it just ended up that way. You know, I guess part of me says, listen, what did you really expect, Glenn Greenwald? They know who Miranda is. They know that you know they're going to stop him. You cannot really be surprised or have as much outrage as he did, and then threatened to break, to lose journalistic credibility by threatening revenge, which I thought was kind of sad that Greenwald did that. But on the other side, Miranda is not a terrorist. Did anybody really expect him to be a terrorist? This is just basically them sending a message, being thugs, just like they did at The Guardian, and it's completely ridiculous for the British government to treat him like a terrorist because he is not one.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that, okay, you could say that Miranda is not a journalist. And yes, they knew who he was, and you know they could probably draw that conclusion that he was going there to get something. The problem is that drugs and the content or the information that he was, you know, potentially bringing back, I don't think that there's a comparison. I think that's apples and oranges. Obviously, drugs have the ability to do people harm. The people who buy them most likely are doing that harm of their own volition. But this information, it only really does the government harm because it, you know, shines some light onto some dark secrets that they've been keeping. And The Guardian has been pretty consistent. It's been probably the most consistent outlet, would you guys say, in terms of releasing some of this information that's really shed some light for the American public on some of the things that our government has been up to. And so I think it's interesting, you know, I mean, even going back to just having those files destroyed, I mean, it's just a shame because, you know, who's going to start to release that information now? Who is going to, you know, put out those secrets? If they did send that message, is someone going to be bold enough to stand up and say, I've got that information as well, here's what they're doing now? Or is everybody just going to kind of shut up? And what does that do as far as, you know, keeping the minds of Americans who want to know and who deserve to know? How does that affect us?
So, you know, think back to the president before all of these scandals, before all these problems. The media loved him, right? So he was the darling of the media, could do no wrong. And then he gets caught spying on the Associated Press. And what happened? You know, all of a sudden the reporting got a little sharper. You know,
the hand that feeds you.
Absolutely. Don't bite the hand. Don't wake that sleeping dragon that's looking to burn you down. And as soon as you know, the Fox News with the emails with what is James Rosen, I believe, and then now the, you know, with the AP, all of a sudden he woke up the media, and this is what it really reminds me of. When these kind of messages are sent, I do not believe that the media cowers down. I think that The Guardian will continue to publish stories. I think The Washington Post will continue to publish stories. The Wall Street Journal has really jumped into the fray. They're starting to break some news as well. I think when this is the worst possible move that the governments can make, if the goal is to quiet these leaks, if anything, I think they're going to get more intense. And then now you're going to have people like Glenn Greenwald, not necessarily looking for revenge, but I think he's going to be very attentive to the narrative that the White House is putting out, and now he's going to be looking to tag them at every moment. So if the president says, you know, the walls within the NSA are blue, Glenn Greenwald is going to release a document that says, no, they're red, and here's the proof. And I think that's going to be... I think it's going to be tit for tat for the next few months here, where every time the White House tries to get past this, Greenwald's just going to pull him back in. I think the Washington Post is going to be in on this game. And you know what, guys? This has eyeballs. And so, of course, other news outlets are going to want to get in on this as well. So the Wall Street Journal's in on it now. And I think it's just going to get worse and worse. This was definitely a huge mistake that I think the British government and the U.S. government, you know, by proxy, is going to end up regretting.
I disagree, and I'll tell you why. I certainly think that Greenwald will continue to drip, drip, drip the information that was given to him, and so will other folks. I mean, it is stunning to think that just, you know, two or three short months ago, it was only Verizon and it was only phone metadata. And now it's all of the internet, it's every digital communication. They're recording it, they're storing it, you know, they're committing accidents. But I think Greenwald will now, instead of focusing his ire on the United States, he's going to expand that circle a little bit and start going after all the Western governments that do this, especially Britain. So I think it could get a little more uncomfortable there in Britain for the government and for him. But as far as the public's attention, I really think we're witnessing some scary things taking place in the Middle East. And you're now starting to see the media pay attention to that. And, you know, whether or not that is by design or whether that is just, you know, okay, it's undeniable, because if you look at these videos, it's clear that Assad is using chemical weapons. And so now we're going to talk about it. I think that's where the public's attention is about to focus. And the NSA thing is still going to come out, but it's not going to be as top of mind, you know, here in the next month or so as the Middle East goes into, it just descends into further chaos.
Definitely agree. It's a situation that, you know, it is scary when that region of the world destabilizes. And I think you're right, Chris, in that sense that will take center mind, or it will be, you know, on the forefront with us, because it is it's in no one's interest to have an unstable Middle East.
Well, so, Chris, I think that you might be right, but Ryan, I hope you're right.
Yeah,
exactly. Just to tie up the Miranda story, it does look like that the Guardian and David Miranda want an injunction to stop some of the materials from being analyzed and investigated by the GCHQ. However, that injunction did state that if they were trying to thwart or investigate terrorist activities, that they could continue looking at the materials. So it looks like that's happened. And now David Miranda is under criminal investigation based on looking at what was in those materials. And so next question that will lead into our last topic for the night: are we seeing the criminalization of investigative journalism? Are we finally there to where, and I think our next topic will also help answer this, but do you guys think we're there that if you're doing investigative journalism, you had better have some bail money stashed away, because you are likely to see the inside of a jail cell?
I would say we're not there. That's just how it has always been. I think if you were a reporter in the 1960s in Mississippi, and you were working for the Rolling Stone, or you were working for the New Yorker, and you were covering, you know, Bull Connor, and you were asking the wrong questions, you probably were going to have a rough night, or you might not get out of town. I think it just depends on the story and the time, and, you know, if you're, God forbid, you're a female journalist in the Middle East right now, you're in danger. And, you know, reporting is not safe work. It is safe if you're in a newsroom and all you do is just report, you know, the crime reports that you can easily pull off of the printer, or you're just reporting press releases, or you're David Gregory and you don't say anything of any substance. But investigative journalism has always been dangerous. Now, as far as the United States government, it has a brand new shiny toy, and they want to know what you're thinking and what you're doing and what you're saying, and it's not going to necessarily put you in harm's way, but it does mean that your computer's going to turn on at night and want to see what you're up to.
Right.
That is terrifying. That really is a terrifying thought. Thanks for painting that picture, Chris.
Well, you know, there is an interesting kind of thought to that, guys, is that there are 65,000 roughly journalists working for various brands of media outlets, and roughly 5 million people in America that hold some kind of security clearance. And so what that means, there's about 77 people keeping secrets for every one journalist in the country. And so just given that ratio, you know, it seems like these stories are going to continue. I'm not on that pessimistic side yet that this will stop, that it will cut down. And I, you know, I hope that we keep learning more and more about our government. You know, a story that has really avoided much media attention is about a gentleman named Barrett Brown. He is a journalist. He is in prison, and his crime is for copying and posting a URL to a website. So Mr. Brown did not perform any hacking. He did not steal any materials. He did not come into possession of any leaked materials. He linked to a website that contained published emails hacked from a private security contractor, H.B. Gary, and he is now in prison for simply posting a URL. He's looking at a very serious case where the government is saying that linking to secret classified information is now a crime. You know, even though the government's using private subcontractors to store information, they're still saying that even linking information from that contractor is also punishable. I just wanted to get your guys' thoughts real quick. You know, not much is known about this case because the government's actually trying to put a gag order on it, so that it cannot be discussed openly. You know, and meanwhile, the mainstream media is very quiet on the topic. You know, what do you think about this kind of turn of event with Barrett Brown? And, you know, is this something that we could fall into someday, guys? If we link to documents that are leaked, if we link to on the WeAreLibertarians.com website, if we happen to put up the wrong link, are we looking at jail time?
I think James Clyburn's comments, you know, you hear it from Lindsey Graham, you heard it from James Clyburn yesterday on POTUS, on Sirius, are bloggers journalists? Well, according to James Clyburn, no. All they are is troublemakers who give, you know, Shirley Sherrod a tough time and distort the truth about Acorn. You know, so I think there will come a time very soon where we're going to end up with a case in the Supreme Court making the decision, are bloggers journalists or not? Now, as far as linking the information, I somewhere in the recesses of my mind remember a teacher telling me, a professor telling me that if it is already out there and it's already printed and you're just exposing it a little bit more, that is not the same as publishing for the first time the classified material. So I don't know how much trouble this guy's actually going to be in, you know, if it's going to stand or not. But I do think that this is the beginning. You know, we're now going to really start seeing these cases where, you know, hey, are bloggers journalists? Are we journalists here? Even though that we do this for, you know, it's basically a free part-time job for us, but, you know, we don't get paid anything for what we do. Are we journalists or not? So we'll see. I think it's going to happen someday where we're going to see a Supreme Court decision on it.
If a person were to gun someone down and they received that gun from another person who knew that they had the intent of gunning that person down, they would be considered an accessory, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so I can see the government's justification that if a person releases information that shouldn't be released and they consider that crime, then a person who links that information and further puts it out or further projects it would then be an accessory to the original crime. I can see the justification. I disagree with the premise that it's a crime in the first place.
So let me hit you with this.
Go ahead.
So The Guardian today put out a story about how Facebook, Yahoo, Google all receive payment from the U.S. government for participating in PRISM. You know, those funds go towards infrastructure and compensating them for, you know, whatever things that they go through. Now, that article listed a number of classified documents that were attached to it that were opened up. And I linked those documents on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page, which everyone should be checking out if you're not. There's a lot of great stories out there. But this was linked to that page. I linked classified documents to our Facebook wall page. So are you saying that I know you don't believe this, but are you saying that there could be a case, there could be a way to say that posting that out there made us an accessory to the Guardian's leak?
State is going to state, man.
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, like I said, I disagree with the premise that putting that information out there for the people to consume or to understand is a crime in and of itself. And so, right. To my mind, it shouldn't be an accessory. It shouldn't make you a criminal by sharing that link. However, if they are going to make that argument that, you know, situation A is a crime, then I can absolutely see how, you know, they could justify legally what we do in sharing something like that would make us criminals also.
Sure. And this, you know, guys, last week we had a great time with Rob Kendall. He joined us here on the show report. We didn't get to a story about James Risen and some other stories about Eric Holder where James Ball and James Risen were both in the midst of criminal proceedings as well. You know, it just seems like every week now we're seeing stories where a journalist is in, you know, either sitting in a prison cell or awaiting a trial, either for accepting or reporting on classified information. My concern is that this trend is not going away and that even regardless of the promises made by this administration, prosecutions are going to occur. Do you think I'm overstating the problem or is this the new normal?
No, it's the new normal. I mean, it's... The Obama administration and Eric Holder especially have been very they really don't care about freedom of the press. They just don't. I mean, I know I am totally shocked that the Obama administration doesn't give a crap about the Bill of Rights. I don't know about you guys, but I personally am appalled. So they have gone after how many people have they charged? How many journalists have they charged with the Espionage Act? It's like more than all combined presidents previously. And so I just think it's the new normal.
Yeah, I think it's the new normal too. Can you imagine a two-man cell in some prison, you know, two roommates or cellmates who are just getting to know one another?
This better not go where I think it's
going to go. What are you in for? Yeah. Oh, man, I killed my wife. What are you in for? I was a journalist.
You know, I think it's amusing that you made the murderer, you gave the murderer that Puerto Rican accent, Joe. Yeah. I think that's kind of racist.
It's kind of racist.
No. Being Puerto Rican, I can do that because I'm minority adjacent.
Yeah, that's why we can make fat jokes, Ryan.
Hey, we're Smexy, Spangle.
Stop.
All right, guys. I think we put in our work for the week. We hit on the topics of the week. Now, unfortunately, Joe, you're going to be disappointed. Now, Joe Ruiz, we actually have a review on the iTunes page, which all of you should be visiting. Leave us a review. Tell us your thoughts about the show. We'd love to hear it. But one listener decided that they love the introduction that Joe Ruiz does to Jay Carney Says What.
This person is a mental patient.
Yes. There you go, yeah, Joe. Yeah. So you do have a fan. Unfortunately for you, Joe, Jay Carney was on vacation this week. So we're not going to play Jay Carney Says What this week. The listeners, you need to tune in next week because we're going to debut the new jingle, the new intro and outro for Jay Carney Says What. In the meantime, we have a new game for the listeners. This is a game that I hope you guys enjoy. It's called Beat That Tweet. Here's the game, guys. I'm going to read to you a tweet and give you three possible names of the person who sent it. You're going to tell me who sent it. Sounds simple enough?
Sure.
All right, guys, first tweet. With Democrats Spitzer, Danger Wiener, and Filner, which party really has the war on women? Was this sent by Lindsey Graham, Donald Trump, or Rudy Giuliani?
That seems a little... Who was the first one, Ryan?
Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham, it seems a little beneath Rudy Giuliani. I don't know why I feel that way, but I do. It's a little too intelligent for Donald Trump. I'm going Donald Trump.
Chris is going Donald Trump. Joe, which way are you going?
Yeah, I don't think it's too intelligent for Donald Trump at all. It sounds kind of like something he would say, with Wiener potentially running in New York, or at least, you know, he was going to, or whatever. I could see Giuliani doing it. I think Graham has other things to shill about. I'm going to go with Giuliani on this.
Spangle, you are on the board.
Yes, finally. And I was thank God you cut me off. I was just about to switch my vote to go with Joe. I'm so gun shy.
It was, in fact, Donald Trump who made the comment about the Democrats and questioning which party has the war on women. So, Chris, congratulations. You are on the board, sir.
And yet somehow I don't feel like a winner.
Because it's like a different game. It's just a different game. You're lucky Tweet number on two. Vacation.
I know. It doesn't count unless we're playing Jay Carney, but Chris, congratulations.
No, that's a good game too, though.
I'd like to
All
make
right,
a
guys.
Speech.
Tweet number two. This week, John McCain was called in for jury duty. McCain hasn't served on a jury since the landmark case of Man versus Fire.
Boo.
Was this sent by Conan O'Brien, Jay Leno, or Adam Carolla?
It's not narcissistic enough to be Adam Carolla. I say that with all due love and respect. But
I love the Ace Man. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Carolla loves to talk about Carolla, so it's not going to be him. It's a little it's a little bit pedestrian. So I'm going Jay Leno.
All right, Joe. Chris is going Jay Leno.
I am going to go Jay Leno as well because I think Conan is funnier than that.
You both would be wrong. This is actually a Conan O'Brien bit. This was a tweet from Coco. No points awarded this round.
I had faith in you, Conan.
Yeah.
Next tweet. The media elite continue to portray sane voices in Congress as extreme and extreme voices as sane. Their time's up. Americans are figuring it out. Was this A, Glenn Beck, B, Justin Amash, or C, Alec Baldwin?
Oh, well, it's not Alec Baldwin.
Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Joe's going with Glenn Beck. Chris, which way are you going? Who thinks that the media elite continue to portray sane voices in Congress as extreme and extreme voices as sane?
I don't think Amash has the juice that he can start, like, telling off the media yet, so I'm going Glenn Beck too.
Yeah, he's going to want to continue to be friendly, get the interviews, get his message out. Beck is in a position where he can pretty much say anything he wants because he is the media. I mean,
right.
It's like we always say, become the media if you want to get your message out. That's what Beck has essentially done, so I'm going to say Beck.
Don't you know, bash your competitors. Hey, listen to my stuff. So this one's easy.
This one was hard, gentlemen. Amash has more juice than you gave him credit for. That tweet came out just a few days ago from Justin Amash. Their time is up. Americans are figuring it out. That was all Amash.
Wow. That's,
can you believe that, Spangle?
It's kind of ballsy, man.
It is. He's out there. Here's number four. Let's see if we can get more than 1 point on the board, guys. This is getting a little sloppy. Here we go. The media spent more time on Obama's new $1,000 dog than evil thrill killers of Chris Lane. Double standard shows. Lamestream media's true colors and desire to exploit.
Oh, that is a douchey tweet.
And I have an excellent panel of douches for you to pick from, Chris.
First
Sarah
douche.
Palin.
Oh, queen douche.
Rush Limbaugh.
King douche.
Or Bill O'Reilly.
Prince douche.
Was lamestream media part of that tweet, did you say?
Yes.
Palin.
Yeah, Palin.
Both are going Palin?
Yeah.
You guys are correct.
Yes.
Well done. Joe, you are on the board.
Yes, sir.
That means I won one.
Chris, you are up 2-1. We're going into the last tweet. Here we go. I await Jeffrey Toobin walking the block to the Times to perform a citizen arrest of their data mules. Was that Glenn Greenwald, Jay Rosen, or Jeff Jarvis? So someone's taking a cheap shot at Jeff Toobin for his drug mule comment, and they're waiting for him to take a walk over to the Times and perform a citizen arrest. Who would make that tweet? Glenn Greenwald, Jay Rosen, or Jeff Jarvis?
Jeff Jarvis, for those that don't know, is on This Week in Google. He's a media critic. He works for
the... writes for The Guardian.
Yeah, writes for The Guardian. And it just sounds like his phraseology. So I'm going Jeff Jarvis.
Joe, what do you think?
Rosen.
All right, Joe, you've gone Jay Rosen. Chris, you've gone Jeff Jarvis. Chris Spangle, you are the winner this week. Woo! That was Jeff Jarvis.
Can I get a word?
Oh.
Yes. You're only playing that. You
Come
played
on,
that
Joe,
because
let's give
you
Chris
lost.
A round of applause.
All right. Good job, Spangle.
Thank you.
Spangle, well,
I'd like to thank all the little people like Ryan and Joe.
Ryan, you confuse me.
So what do you guys think? Is this a game we should try again sometime?
I liked that.
Yeah, all that's right. A good one.
Well, that's it for this week, guys. I think we had a full news schedule. We hit it pretty hard. We had a little fun at the end, and now it's time for us to say goodbye. For the listeners out there, leave us a message on the Facebook page or on Twitter with the show report hashtag. Find out what we left out of this episode on page 2 of the show report, available on wearelibertarians.com. Listen in on iTunes or on wall-radio.com to hear past episodes. The show report also plays on indianatalks.com. And remember, folks, when the media breaks the news, the show report is here to fix it. Good night, everyone.